Welcome to the RNA School Library Journal production. I'm Colby Sharp. Today's episode, we talk with author Amy Parks about her new book, Avril Offline. Amy is a university professor at Michigan State University. Go Green. In this episode, we'll talk about how this book was inspired by one of her favorite books, The Mixed Up Files of Mrs. Basil E. Frankweiler. We'll talk about how her being with her university students in the library instead of her normal classroom led to a phone call to one of her students from their parent and how that kind of moved the story idea along. We'll talk about all kinds of awesome things in today's episode. It's time to unravel Avril Offline. Amy, tell me a little bit about Avril Offline.
Well, Avril Offline was inspired by The Mixed Up Files of Mrs. Basil E. Frankweiler, which I loved as a kid, where in that one, a brother and sister run away to a museum in New York, and they live there for a week. And I always wanted to write a story like that, and because I'm a college professor, I thought that a college campus would be a great place to put kids for an adventure like that.
Now, where did this initial idea come from? Because you love Mixed Up Files, mm-hmm. and now you're an educator working on a college campus. Like, when did that idea first come from? It would be cool to write a story like that to actually writing a story.
Sure.
Like that.
So I think, like, in order to have it enough there for a book, it often has to be more than one idea. So I had this in the back of my head probably my whole life. But I teach college now, and I had some of my college students talking about their parents tracking them on Life 360. So one of my students, actually, we met for children's literature in the MSU library instead of our classroom, and she got a call from her mom saying, "Why aren't you in class?" And I was like, oh my gosh, you know, this is an adult. And so I started like reading stories about it, and it occurred to me that if I put that like tracking question together with this running away question, now I had something that was going to be an interesting story. So that's when I really, it was after that interaction in my class when I really started writing.
That's so interesting because I feel like one of the biggest issues a lot of times that authors have in creating a book for kids is the parents are a pain, right? Like, what are we going to do about the parents? Because so often, what we want to happen in a book, the parents would get in the way, which I think is why we have so many books at summer camp and so many books at boarding schools.
100%.
And now your parent, the parent in your book is like the ultimate, I mean, it is the problem in the book. So what was it like, how did you like develop this mom and this kid?
Well, I knew all of my books have STEM girls in them because I'm a math educator. So I knew I wanted my main character to have that background. And because it was about a tracking app, coding seemed like the right place to focus that. And then I think both because of who I am and to like give an arc in the story, I wanted a character who was afraid of conflict, used to like going along to get along. And so the story really had to be about her learning to stand up for herself. And then I wanted parents that weren't villains, but were still antagonists, right? Like, you know, if you think about like Matilda by Roald Dahl, like these parents are awful. They're prototypical. And of course, like there are parents who are awful, but I think much more often, like parents are doing their best out of like what, I mean, their own fears for their kids and all those things. But the result is often kids end up feeling really fenced in by their parents. And so I'm just a lot more interested in that story than the parents are really terrible people, you know?
Yeah. So people listening, the educators listening who have children definitely know what Life 360 is. So it's an app where you can basically know where people are. You can get notifications. My family uses it, so I'll get a notification when my 17-year-old son who's new to driving gets to school, when he gets home, if I'm still at school. So that's very helpful. What can you tell us a little bit about the Ruby Slipper app?
Yeah.
Your version of Life 360.
Right. So I wanted an app that was like Life 360, but not exactly that, partly because technology changes so fast. If you use a real life thing, it's gone by the time your book comes out. But also I wanted to push it a little further into something that would be more, I guess, easily understood as outrageous because people are used to Life 360 and they don't think it's that weird. So I added in little things like meal tracking, or like not just that you get a notification, but an alarm goes off if you step out of your like range that you're supposed to be in. And then like the big tension in the book is this app is about to come out with the ability for parents to take a picture off their kid's phone wherever they are, which just seemed to be, to me, to be both the next technological step and like something that was really, truly horrifying in terms of invading kids' privacy.
So what was the first thing that you wrote?
The first thing that I wrote were scenes with Max and April. That first one when they're in the cafeteria and he's sort of introducing himself to her, and then the one in the ice cream store where he proposes running away to go see this app developer. I often feel like I don't really know my characters until I have them in conversation with each other. And so that was definitely how I built out both the story and their relationship.
Is that normal for you to not like start at the beginning?
Yes. My very first book, I was a professor and I wrote probably half of it in PowerPoint slides. So I'd be sitting in meetings and I would just write scenes and then I could move them around to sort of get the order, because people come a lot more easily to me than plot. So I know how people are, but it takes me a while to figure out what is an arc of the story.
What was the maybe the hardest thing about getting the story right?
I think two things. I mean, one, like there's a lot of like little mysteries and clues in the story. And so trying to have those so they were set up as people read, but also so it wasn't given away too early. And especially thinking about like writing this for fifth, sixth, seventh graders, wanting it to be just at that right level where they're sort of figuring things out immediately before the character. Because if it's too soon, then it's boring. And if they don't figure it out ahead of the character, at least some of the time, then like it's not as pleasurable. Like you want that payoff. So trying to get that just right was tricky. And then I think trying to find the right ending. You know, you asked about my editor and we went back and forth for a while. Both she and my agent said it would really be better if the kids in the end triumphed and they shot down this whole app and then it never happened again. And I was really resistant to that, both because I think it's not realistic, but also because just in general, we're not putting technology back in the box. Like the answer isn't, oh, we're just going to destroy all this stuff. The answer has to be, we're going to figure out a way to live together with these new technologies, because there is no other way through it. So like finding an ending that felt hopeful and uplifting and like April had grown, but also wasn't like, and now no one will ever use trapping apps again, you know?
So we have this, we're writing these scenes and we're writing these PowerPoint slides. When does it start to become like a story?
I think once I have the feel for both the characters and what that big conflict is going to be 75% in. Once I know that, I can write toward it. And I've now, I guess, written six books, published four. And that ordering has gone differently every time. My first book I wrote from the climax to the end, and then I went back to the beginning and wrote up to that. April, I wrote these chunks, but then I pretty much started at the beginning and worked all the way through.
How long was it from the beginning to you turned in your last round of edits?
Well, I wrote this as part of an MFA program during the pandemic. I went back to school, and so I wrote the first draft during my fall semester.
Okay.
I just kind of raced through it, and then the next semester I revised it. So it was a year to like finish product, but really only a semester of drafting.
So you have this year of drafting, revising, and then you take it to your agent?
Yes.
And had they seen it before?
She had not. I generally only share it after it's pretty polished.
Okay, so it's pretty polished. She gets it. And does she give, do you like revise it from there before you start sending it out?
Yes. Yeah. And I actually, it was funny because, you know, there were definitely things that she suggested that needed to get cleaned up. But then she was like, oh, I feel like this ending is way too fast. It's one thing after the other. Let's add a scene and slow it down. So we put in this really playful ice skating scene. I loved it. But then when I got my first round of comments from my editor, she was like, let's get the pacing up on the ending. Let's get rid of these scenes. And I was like, great. Yeah. Took them back out. So, like, some of this is so subjective, right, about how people feel about books and what they like, and that's why the process is sort of so hard.
That's so interesting. So did you send it out to like multiple editors?
And yeah, we did.
And then Nancy Paulson was interested?
Yes, because my first book, Summer of Brave, my first middle grade book, was with a pretty small publisher, okay. And so we knew we wanted to try and go a little bigger on this one. So we, even though I really loved actually my editing experience with that first one, we went bigger.
There's nothing really bigger than Nancy Paulson books.
Yes, so. Well, that's what my agent told me. Like, I have to say, I didn't even really know that because there was actually another editor who offered, who I also really loved her and her books. And my agent was like, no, this is what we're doing. Yeah. And I was like, okay. And it's been great. And it was the right decision. But that's why having a team is so important.
Absolutely.
Because you don't always know.
Absolutely. And then I'm curious, because you are a college teacher. You're teaching math to education students. You're teaching children's literature to education students. What does a typical day look like? And when are you finding time to, besides, you know, planning the book when you're supposed to be paying attention to a meeting?
Yeah, meetings are a great place for thinking through problems. Can't stress that enough. I write first thing in the morning. I stop at the Panera on the way to work, and then usually write, like, sometimes just for half an hour, sometimes for an hour. But for me, having locations where I do particular things is really generative for me. Like, when I'm at the Panera, I'm thinking about my fiction. I know I'm not going to get interrupted. And, like, that's just where my brain goes. And then I go to work and I do my work things, and I go to home and I do my home things. And I really generally don't mix up those three things.
So you have all these different boxes.
Yeah, I have all these different boxes. That's right. And, you know, it goes slowly when you're writing half an hour a day. But middle grades are not very long. And even YA is not super long. So if you do it every day, eventually you get done.
So if you're drafting, like, how much can you write in a half hour?
I mean, I would say 500 words is typical if I'm really cooking 1,000.
Okay. And so how many pages is 500 words, would you say?
It's a little over one page. Like, the Averill is 38,000 words, which is short for a middle grade, but not that far out of typical.
Wow. Do you enjoy writing?
I love it.
Why? What do you love about it?
You know, I started... I didn't write my first fiction book until I was pretty old, like in my 40s. And it started as sort of an anxiety response. Work was hard. The world outside was hard. Yeah. And like, I had always lost myself reading books, but it felt like it wasn't enough anymore. And so I started, like, telling myself stories before I went to bed. And then I started writing stories. And so, like, the thing that I love most is, like, moving into this imaginary world. And then I tend to write pretty happy stories. So being in spaces that feel fun and joyful, it's actually a really important counterpoint to my work, which, like, I mean, I love working with teachers, but, you know, teaching can be really hard. Schools can be really hard. Mm-hmm. And so I need that, like, emotional, I don't know, stabilization that I get from fiction in order to do the other work I do.
When you decided to start writing, or you felt like you needed to start writing, did you know it would be for children?
Yeah. I mean, I've always loved middle grade and YA. There's, like, an immediacy to it that I don't think a lot of adult books have. And so I've always, and of course I, you know, was an elementary school teacher, and now I teach in elementary school, so it feels like a really natural place to be for me. I don't think I ever thought about, oh, what could it possibly be? You know, I said I started telling myself stories. The story was a YA story, and so that's what I wrote. It wasn't even a decision, I don't feel like.
Do your children's literature students know that you write children's literature?
They do, yeah.
Is it one of the books that you read in class?
No, that's too weird.
I guess the last question is, what is your hope for this book?
My hope for this book, for children is really that it is like just this escapist fantasy of this like place of freedom that like even if kids can't live in their real lives right now, they can go visit for a little while. I want it to be like fun and puzzly and all those things. And for grownups, I hope it recenters the conversation a little bit and helps adults to see these surveillance technologies from kids' perspectives and really to think about the ways in which our fear as adults are driving us to do things that are like not appropriate for our kids. Like sometimes I think we don't see our kids as fully human and we do things to our kids that we would not do, like to a partner, right? Mm-hmm. We wouldn't track a partner in the same way. In fact, we would be concerned if we heard someone saying that, and yet we feel like we can do that to our children sort of unproblematically, and I guess I'd just like to question that a little bit.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Yarn. Thank you to my co-host, Travis Yonker, for helping me to edit this episode. Thank you to Amy Parks for driving to my school to talk about Avril Offline. We had a great conversation after school one day. Thank you to Philip Stead for creating our theme song. Additional music for this episode comes from the Free Music Archive. Thank you so much for tuning in, for subscribing, for listening and sharing the show. It means the world to us. My name's Colby Sharp. Thank you for listening.